for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground. Episode 66, no corporate sponsors, no corporate tricks, always building, developing like bricks, please like and subscribe, thanks for your clicks, we break it down but not to rubble, Phil and Walton each week you get double, Bitcoin is pumping but it's not a bubble, don't get leveraged, it'll end in trouble, toxicity is truth, it can be savage, anti-fragility training to prevent damage, carnivore diet, no fiat brain cabbage, Bitcoin is mean, aim above average, cook this in November, haute cuisine, all tender, banknotes might be legal, float right like you're regal. I used to not wait, blaze, bait ya. Now I'm sober, 28 days later. Not living life like a zombie, wearing represent, not Abercrombie. Not wearing a tie, nor loose threads. Don't rely on chance, not tails or heads. Keep stacking the coin and you get both. Make each year about personal growth. No more joints, fingers bund. Keep building that fund. Embrace what I penned. Replace if you spend. There is no try, there is only do. Look up to the sky, it's not only you. Deliver this in one breath, ham. Rep myself until death, jam. I might have a Mediterranean complexion. Tonight we're joined by an Italian connection. As always, our chat and unscripted panel. Liquidity flowing like the English Channel. Almost Christmas, you Scrooge. Can't live like a miser. Can't slip like a luge. Stay flush like a geyser.
Welcome back to the Pleb Underground. Joining us today is the CEO and co-founder of Geyser Fund, talking about Metamic. Metamic, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Love what you guys are doing. Awesome to be here. Pleasure.
Well, you know what? We love what you're doing. So right back at you. Awesome to have you on. All right, guys, we're going to move it on over to the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers, of course, brought to us by Time Chain Stats and Time Chain Calendar. Phil, what do the numbers look like this week?
At the time of this recording, the block height is 820,293. The Bitcoin fiat exchange, 43,823.67. Total public lightning capacity, 5,115.4. Moscow time, 2281. Fastest fee. Wow. 51 sats per V, but it felt like it was like over 200. Anyways, days to the halving, 137. And the chain rewrite days, 675. Boom. That's where we're at. Happy with that, Walton? You look like you're happy. Yeah. What do you think, Mick? You happy where we are?
Hash rate going up, security going up. Looks good to me. Yeah, price is scary. It's already gone much higher than I would have liked. I need to stack more. Every time it goes up, I feel a bit of pain. Don't know about you guys, but yeah. But
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm at that stage now where it's just, it hurts. But it's good. It's healthy. It's Bitcoin doing its thing. And the worst part is I know myself. So I always buy the top, you know? And so it's, and so I know that I will eventually buy the top as well. As the hype comes, I will FOMO in. But I think let's see what happens this cycle.
How do you feel about mempool fees going up?
Yeah, I mean it's that thing, right? Where it's in some way it's good because it helps to test the network, right? Helps to test the network from you know, essentially what will happen with adoption, with prices going up, and so it helps us to find more better ways to make the mempool more efficient. But yeah, let's see, there's a lot of talk this week about what that might lead to in terms of hard forks, which is interesting, but I need to catch up on, honestly. I'm not sure I have a super formed opinion yet.
I'm with you on that. I think we talked about this last week or maybe in the last couple of weeks, the greater fee pressure causes pain that drives innovation with regards to scaling solutions. And that's a good thing. You know, people can sit around and complain, but ultimately, if you're intelligent, you move around the problems, right? You have to innovate around them. You have to take advantage of low fee environments when they're there, and when they're not there, you know, see how maybe you can contribute to developing scaling tools for batching transactions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, unless it's more than just a HiFi environment, it's actually a potential spam attack on Bitcoin, in the sense that, and again, I don't have super fully formed opinions on this, but what if there's, you know, a chance to actually continue to spam the network in this sort of way? I guess it's true. I guess it's really true for Bitcoin transaction as well. You could have an account, you know, state-sponsored attack that just sends infinite amounts of transactions and spans the network that way as well. So I wonder if that would, if the fact that there is just not financial data being sent, it's not an op return, it's an op, I forget what the other one is, that ordinals inscription use, that if that enables an actual type of attack to the Bitcoin system.
How do you define spam?
This is where we get into the gray area.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've seen people argue that the ordinals data, right, the inscription information is spam.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, spam is totally subjective, right? Totally subjective. And what you think is spam, you know, the other guy will say that it's graffiti, right? It's art. What you guys have behind you, right? It's art. That what I'm suggesting that it might be the problem is, what if this actually is an attack that, you know, could lead to the entire network being super congested and unusable. But I was reading this really good article this week by JB55 about how inscriptions might be an exploit, because they use this op push instead of the op return, which is what where the financial data is being carried, and it might mean that you have additional type of congestion. And but again, we need to see, right? Let's see if it really is a test, if it really is an attack. If it is, we'll find out and we'll find solutions for it. But right now, it seems a little bit premature to say that it's an attack, it seems.
Personally, I'm increasingly of the opinion, if you're paying the fee, you're paying the fee. What I have a maybe bigger problem with is the bloat that this is causing for actually what's being stored. I feel like it was only, I don't know, earlier this year that the Bitcoin blockchain was something like, what, 500-600 gig, and now it's like 750. I feel like it's the pace at which it's growing is increasing, and that's a bigger problem, because it means that over time maybe there will be fewer people that can run nodes, because you're going to have bigger and bigger hard drives to store all that data. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so too, right? That's the whole point of the blockchain, keeping it lean. Mm-hmm. And that's why they had all those like checks in place to make sure that there would not be, you know, there's these limits, and then they increased the limit slightly to what, 80, it was first 40 bytes, then it was increased to 80, then 83, to support larger root Merkle hashes and stuff. And but then, so with the inscription, they found a way to essentially work around that by distinguishing data as Bitcoin script program data via the op push. So it's basically not like financial transaction data of the actual transaction. It's like the code surrounding that transaction, and that's how they were able to kind of create these inscriptions.
One of the key differences here is that an op return is with an unspendable output, whereas the op push, are you saying, is with a spendable output? Is that?
I think it's not even that. It's essentially this it's the script of the program data itself. It's not even the part of the transaction data. But again, I need to look more into this as well. But what it tells me is really it's it's not really meant to be. It's not meant to be storing this type of data. And if it keeps bloating, I think, you know, it's not good for the network. So let's see if it gets a lot worse. But if it is, we might have to, maybe have to do something about it. I don't know. Right now, it doesn't seem like that. Doesn't seem like that big of an attack yet. But we'll have to pay attention and see what happens.
Hard fork.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there's going to be a solution, right?
Oh, no, man, I don't know. Ideally not, right? That's like the ultimate solution, but hopefully we don't get there.
Yeah, but at the same time, if history, you know, even though it may not repeat, it often rhymes. And unfortunately, Bitcoin, the Bitcoin space seems to have, for whatever reason, a lot of people that want to be kings of their own kingdoms. Mm. So, you know, it's like it's not enough to just be contributing to Bitcoin and be building out, helping to build out this ecosystem. You got to let everybody know that you've built this palace. You know, you've got your own rules, and we just find a lot of those people, and hence this is how we have all the shitcoiners, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of them is a king in their palace. But speaking of the fees, right? Speaking of paying the fees, I do agree with Walton. For me, it's like, hey, look, if the ability is there, right, and you can do it, and you're paying the fees, okay, it's, you know, I may not agree with what you're doing, right? I'm not doing it myself. I may see it as an attack. I may see it as spam. I may see it as whatever I see it. But, you know, the rules are such that you can do this. So,
yeah,
it's a really slippery slope. And it also calls into a lot about, you know, philosophy and, you know, the way that we perceive Bitcoin, right? Because there's a lot of people that have, you know, a lot of, you know, libertarian / anarcho capitalist / you know, like all kinds of these fringe types of beliefs in Bitcoin. And so it's difficult, right? Like it's kind of tough. It's not cut and dry, right? Like I'd love for it to just be black and white, and it's not,
absolutely,
right?
It's gray. Not, absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. And I must, same with you guys. I totally think it should be an open marketplace, but Bitcoin was designed in a proper way, right? And like Walton said, if we start, you know, now if we go from 700 gigs, right, to say 500 terabytes, like what if that could happen? What if you could put that amount of data? Bitcoin is not designed for that, right? That was the whole point. If it becomes so, if it gets so bad,
and it's BSV, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Who's going to actually run a node? So there's a threshold. It's not like, oh yeah, it's a free for all. Everyone should do whatever they want. There's no structure. That makes no sense, right? Yeah. We can agree on that. But then also creating a hard fork as soon as this is possible also seems like a bit of a rush. I think it's worth pay attention and be aware of the potential, potentially seeing this as a vulnerability, because again, if the size of the transactions of the running a node starts becoming really difficult, well, that really starts becoming a problem.
Yeah. And speaking of problems, we're going to move on. Okay. So Walton, you provided this one. And I think that this is a very interesting topic. So here we go. It's a tweet from Alistair Milne in El Salvador offering visas and citizenships to anyone investing $1 million in USDT or Bitcoin in the country. Frankly, uncompetitive in the global market. You can get an EU citizenship for less. So disappointing. And what is he doing? He's retweeting this tweet from Tether. Tether powers El Salvador's visionary freedom visa program through technology support. Yeah, so experience freedom, security, and Bitcoin lifestyle by adopting El Salvador as your home through the Freedom Visa Program. And if I understood correctly, it's like 1,000 people or something like that that are allowed to apply to this.
To me, the numbers are just way off, right? I mean, Alistair Milne is, for starters, some like shitcoin of VC, right, that's been into Bitcoin for a long time. Mm. So, you know, he's probably looking at multiple residencies so that he can have some protection for when, you know, regulators come after him for pushing shitcoins or whatever, right? I do think that over the next 10 years, Bitcoiners are going to be looking to acquire additional residencies, passports, citizenships. $1 million is a lot for one of those. You can get ones in the Caribbean, I think, for, you know, between $100,000 and $200,000. So $1 million is a lot of money. Increasingly, it seems that El Salvador's not necessarily about what it can do for Bitcoin and what Bitcoin can do for it, right? Max and Stacy are just trying to fleece Bitcoiners out of as much as they can. And the clips I've seen of El Salvador look like it isn't somewhere that you could pay me to go and live, let alone a place that I'd have to pay a lot of money to go and live.
Yeah, I think you have a point there. And actually, I just want to bring up a tweet that I put out after I read that. Yeah, so here, I put this out. This was a response to a fellow Bitcoiner. Fiat has no chance. He goes, first, it was 3 Bitcoin for citizenship. Then it was $1 million for citizenship. Now Americans can't buy citizenship. So I just put, I go, El Salvador might just be the biggest grift narrative in Bitcoin. Time will tell. And I don't mean to be that person, right, raining on the parade, but I think unfortunately there's way too many of us, right? I'm going to include myself. I'm not going to pretend that I was not pleased, right, when El Salvador announced that Bitcoin was legal tender, right? Like, I mean, of course, absolutely, I was pleased. But at the same time, I mean, it's healthy to be skeptical and it's healthy to be cautious. And I was like, listen, it's nice to see that they've done this, but we should just wait. And really, to your point, Walton, you know, with the cheerleading that's going on, right, from people like Max and Stacy,
I do see the Swan Crack House, right?
That's right. You know, they've got the Swan House over there. I do in fact see it as like a pretty big Bitcoin grift, right? Like, and I do know, and I'm not going to sit there and name people, but I do know some people, some Bitcoiners who own businesses that have visited El Salvador, and they're obviously, you know, kind of not willing to say this in public because they don't want to get crapped on, but they were really underwhelmed. So, you know, like, I don't, again, people are totally entitled to make their own choices. Like, I don't really care. I'm just saying there's multiple sides to the coin. And we go back to our previous argument of things not being black and white, right? Our existence is gray. Not everything is, you know, just good or bad. And the truth of the matter is that right now, it's exactly what you said, Walton. It's what Bitcoin can do for El Salvador.
And how many seed oils can they sell in their foods to you as well, right? Like, I don't think it's exactly, all it's cracked up to be.
What are your thoughts?
They have a lot of seed oils.
I mean, have you not seen what those pupusas look like? They just look like like pre 69% seed oils. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. I do think so too. That's true. But I think, I mean, I don't get it. I don't get the whole $1 million thing. Cause apparently you can go and live there and get a 3-month visa to live there and then extend it, I think, to basically a year. And then after, you can extend it again. And then after 4 years or so, you can get citizenship. So I don't understand. maybe I'm misinformed, but from my understanding, you can get a long tourist visa quite a long time. And so there's ways that are not paying that $1 million. That 3 Bitcoin thing apparently just never kicked off. So I think there's something marketing wise they're not doing right, which I think, honestly, I think that's really that. Whatever they're doing, it's not working, it's backfiring. And it's, from my understanding, not even true. So I don't know. It's making, like you said, it's making me further away, just not want to go to El Salvador. Well, actually, there's reason to see it as a potential safe haven. Like, of course, like, I'd rather stay in Europe, and I'm 100% in line with you guys, but you'll never know, right? You never know what happens here. You never know what happens in the States. And it may be because, I don't know, the SEC comes after you, or maybe because you actually hold Bitcoin that you have to leave. Like, you really never know.
Yeah, to me, it sounds like there aren't many maxis that are going to dash over to El Salvador anytime soon.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Anyways, guys,
not anytime soon.
Let us know. Let us know.
Dash, of course, being one of the shitcoins that Max promoted many years ago.
Max coin.
And El Salvador now, maybe the latest shitcoin that Max is promoting.
Hey, listen, Tether Gold has a future. Okay, Tether Gold. Anyways, no, it doesn't. Oh, God, that's brutal. Guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments, and we're going to take a look at our next and final tweet here for the numbers. Just to let you know, we are super early. Not that anybody, not that that's news to any of us, right? But I just want to reinforce this. And this tweet, I think, helps reinforce this. I love the Zach XBT account. I really do. Not only for, you know, the amount of work that he does in and around the space, but at the same time, you get these treasures like this. So here we go. This is from Zach XBT. Through this year, I've been monitoring someone who has withdrawn 11,200 ETH, $25 million from Tornado Cash, and spent the majority of it on Magic the Gathering trading cards. So if you think for a second that ordinals are going away, if any of this grifting is going away, no, it isn't. There's people out there spending $25 million on trading cards.
So this is the new Mt. Gox then, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Because Mt. Gox was a Magic the Gathering trading site, right? The Gox.
It was. Anyway. It was. So who knows? Maybe that's it. Maybe ETH is now going to have its own little Mt. Gox moment. But it was just to point out, guys. $25 million on trading cards. He's not going to make it. I'm sorry.
I think it's pretty to do with like laundering, like many other kind of art purchases, right? Right.
Oh God, it's so true, and especially out of Tornado Cash, right? You want to clean those tokens before you buy those trading cards. Anyways, that's just wrecked, guys. We're gonna move on from the numbers, and we are gonna move it on over to the Fireside Chat. The Fireside Chat is brought to you by CipherSafe. We keep hearing one horror story after another. Guys, you need to store your seed in somewhere that is virtually indestructible. Make sure you go take a look at the Cypher Grid. Store your seed in the Cypher Grid. Comes with this awesome little punch tool, and that is at cyphersafe.io. If you appreciate fine Bitcoin art, check out the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle. 16 ounces of solid titanium made by a Bitcoiner for fellow Bitcoiners. That is the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle at cyphersafe.io. Welcome back, everyone. You know who we've got on the show. That's right. We've got the CEO and co-founder of Geyser Fund. We've got Meta Mick, and he is in the Fireside Chat hot seat today. So, Meta Mick, we really appreciate you joining us on the show. We've got a lot of questions. I know that a lot of plebs are always wondering how they can get funding for different projects, and I know that at Geyser Fund, you guys are helping enable that. You're helping bridge the gap in that particular respect. So hats off to you. And of course, really appreciate having you on the show.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here.
Mick, maybe you can tell us a little bit about why Geyser? Why does this exist, right? That, you know, there are a number of ways people can raise money, but why did you create this product?
Absolutely, yeah, great question. So the origins of Geyser kind of help understand a bit of that, where that impetus came from. But I was kind of realized that there was a lot of there were a lot of ideas circulating on Twitter, people coming up with different arts and music and fundraising for events and concerts and all sorts of crazy things, especially in the context of Lightning, just all the activity around Lightning made possible all these awesome payments. And then I noticed people just sending screenshots of their QR codes, and I just couldn't stand that. I wanted that. I realized that there, you know, you have something there where people want to contribute to something important and send money like borderlessly, instantly. But also as a creator, as a funder of some of these ideas, I wanted to be recognized. I wanted to feel a part and participant of it. I wanted to feel part of a community for making something happen. And so that's really when I reached out to Stelios, my co-founder, and had some ideas for a platform that then we realized was really just a crowdfunding platform that could scale and grow and become an actual service. And then once we started doing that, we realized there was a much bigger problem than we initially anticipated. So we looked at these traditional platforms like GoFundMe and Kickstarter and Indiegogo and some
just
of these.
Just briefly, where was this in terms of the timing of, because I remember the GoFundMe, there was a lot of drama with them and the Canadian truckers, right? Was this exactly a similar sort of time?
So it was right before that. And this was summer 2021, and we then started building, and then 6 months after, we released Geyser, and then the trucker thing happened. But we were not, like, the week after we launched, but what we launched, it was a pilot, it was only one project, it was a project of a conference in Nigeria, Bitcoin conference in Nigeria, and we basically were not ready for that, right? So we had a lot of people sending requests, oh, we want this project up, and it was about the truckers, but we didn't want to call that much attention to us because we were just way too small. So we kind of stood under the, you know, behind the scenes on that particular event. What we realized though is that GoFundMe, exactly as you said, GoFundMe censors, but also it only works in 30 countries. Right, it only works in places where Stripe, PayPal are able or willing to operate in. So we said, oh my god, like they don't work in Nigeria, they don't work in the Philippines, they don't work around South America, and they're massive companies, right, that have insane amount of revenues and generate an insane amount of value to the world. And yet they're stuck because of the financial system. They operate in this financial system that limits them. So that was a problem. And then also just the experience of funding was absolutely horrible. You need to log in on Geyser. You don't have to log in. You can just fund anonymously. We cannot censor as well. We built Geyser in a non-custodial way, so all the funds go straight to the creators. So yeah, all this kind of was really gave us a lot of motivation. We have something here that can bring value to the world.
You're saying all of the funds go straight to the creators. You guys don't take a cut. You have your own fundraising, like project separately. Is that how
it works? Actually, yeah. So that specific project you pulled up was our own project on our platform. But every other project gets their funds directly. We don't store any funds at all.
I imagine that's quite good from a legal perspective, because you're not taking a cut.
No, absolutely. It's from a regulatory standpoint, it's great, because if we were custodying funds, we would have to buy a money transmitter license in many countries, and we don't have to, right? What if the funds go straight to the people? We're just an interface. We essentially are just that, you know, the funds go straight to the creator. And what we do is we recognize people that are funding. So if you click on any of these projects, you can see, if you log in, you can see how much you spent, and that helps to create a bit of hype around a project that really needs it, right? You've got Paco here, who's raised funds. You can see 404 individual contributions. You have a leaderboard. So it's really just a user interface on top of all the funding activity that is happening peer to peer. And it's really simple, but I think really powerful idea of just getting people together to make something happen, something that should happen in the world, making it a reality. So as a result, we see projects that have to do with a lot of Bitcoin education projects, a lot of Bitcoin community projects, you know, like events, meetups, and culture events, culture things like films, music sometimes. Art, we have a few artists as well on there. Just people that have an idea and, like, you know, who's gonna support me, and we just provide that tooling that helps the creator make the most of their community. Really, it's we have a community around us, but obviously the creators kind of bring their own community in there, and Geyser help them get recognized, it's really, you know, really, really powerful like that. So in all effect, Geyser interacts a bit like a website for the projects themselves. Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking, I'm like, all right, so it's like Kickstarter in a way. It's like a mix. It's not just,
I guess, a bit because, like Patreon as well, right?
Yeah.
But without a subscription.
It's weird. It's like you have, and I don't mean weird in a bad way. I mean, like a good way, you know,
right? So GoFundMe,
like an octopus, you know?
Exactly. Well, yeah. Like GoFundMe is just pure donations, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like you send money, and then Quick Kickstarter allows you to sell stuff and give something back. And Geyser is a bit of a mix of those two things. Exactly.
Yeah.
We do those two things. And yeah, so far it seems to be working. 50% of the funds happen through donations and 50% seems to be happening through rewards. And the rewards are, again, like, yeah, if you're selling, if you're like, I have this artistic project and I want to sell some art for it. Well, you can sell your stuff on Geyser. And every, yeah. And all of that will go towards your project. So there's a, it's not really quite a marketplace, but it's a bit like you're selling your items, your rewards in order to give something back for people that are making an idea happen kind of thing. So a bit like Kickstarter. So yeah, but so far those two things have gone really well together. And in fact, we're probably going to push towards the idea of making it more and more about the rewards, because at the end of the day, you always will want to fund more if you get something back for it. And so, yeah, I love your feedback as well, guys, but we're thinking a lot about Noster as well. So we've actually recently integrated Noster. So every Geyser project is essentially a Noster profile. And what that means is every project on Geyser has its own NPub that you can view on any other Noster client. And it's really trying to be more and more open. There's another problem with the crowdfunding.
You're using Noster as the kind of identity aspect of it. That's so interesting. So is that
it's the identity, but also the content itself, the distribution itself. So you can essentially fund the project from Noster on Geyser, right? So if you zap a profile on Noster, it'll fund over Geyser. And that's one key problem that Kickstarter, GoFundMe, and all these platforms have not solved, which is the problem of reach. The fact that creators create content on Patreon, for example, you create content and that content is stuck in your platform and isolated. And as a result of that, no one actually goes to Patreon. Like if you look at the data, the number of active users on Patreon is very low. People use Patreon as a essentially like a financial service. Like it's like, oh, there, I subscribe, but I never actually get much feedback from the creator because I never actually go there. And that's because that's yet another essentially obstacle and access.
It's another isolated site.
Exactly. So with Geyser, we're planning to integrate some other features that will make it possible for creators to share up daily updates or daily or whatever, like their updates. And that will exist across Noster, like they already do. Like creators are already doing that with these long form posts called entries. And we're going to shrink them up, make them into Noster notes, and those will be accessible and visible across the Nosterverse. And with that, really solve another one of the core foundational problems of the internet is that it's all fragmented, it's all isolated, we're all in these different islands and nothing talks to each other. Whereas now with Geyser, and by the way, this also affects has massive implications from censorship resistance, right? So down the road. So right now, Geyser is uncensorable in the sense of from the funding perspective, right? The money we cannot freeze like GoFundMe did with the truckers because the funds go straight to the creators. Mm-hmm. But we still are the owners of a platform that could take a project down, right? For regulatory reasons, right?
But can you know where the funds are coming from? Let's say for hypothetically, I don't know, someone in Iran wants to tip a US-based project. Is that even something that can be seen? Is that something that will you have to do OFAC censoring at some point?
I'm afraid that's something that we have to comply with, like sanctioned countries. There's five sanctioned countries that they cannot access Geyser. So unfortunately, it's a really unfortunate thing. It really sucks, but to operate as an American company, we had to comply with that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to operate. But yeah, that's the one thing we have to do to operate as an American company.
Why are you an American company, out of interest?
We are an American company because, like a lot of the liability elements that are good for American companies to do, and in terms of like the liability, personal liability is offset in America, many other reasons, but it's seen as a better place to set up business also for investors. So that sort of thing also helps. But and I think in the end of the world, it's also good for other strategic reasons in terms of, apart from if you follow the rules with American law, you can operate anywhere that they allow, right? And you can, essentially, if for example, there may be African countries where crowdfunding is illegal, right? Well, if we are operating in the United States, there's not much that they can do much about that, right? Being based in the United States, we can act a lot more globally than we could if we weren't, basically. Essentially, it's got to play the rules of the game, and this is one of the cases. But what I was wanting to say though is that the main point here is that the level of censorship is a lot more diminished because we're not only not censoring at the financial layer, but we're not censoring at the content layer, because even if we were to take a project down, the project would still exist on the Nostr protocol, right? And so it enables a lot more freedom to the creators, a lot more freedom to the users, and data can in some way really removing a lot of power from us, but giving more power to the creator. So yeah, I think it's part of a broader push that we call like really just about openness, open money, spreading and sats flowing freely, content being open across platforms, and also the social graph, like you log in, the identity layer you mentioned about Nostr as well, really, really powerful. Everything you're doing on Geyser will be happening over Nostr. So again, all that social interaction, all the followers you have, all the follower accounts, like it will all be part of that same social graph that is open and uncensorable, and unleashes so much power because there's so much valuable data attached to your profile that you can take that data along with you and every platform that you interact with on Nostr. So yeah, so there's a lot that we're building, but really excited about this idea of just open fundraising that can basically be more and more censorship resistant.
What has been I guess it's a two-pronged question. Okay, so what was your biggest obstacle when you started Geyser? What was the biggest obstacle that you had then, and now that we fast forward a couple of years, can you share what is your kind of like your biggest obstacle now, or what you perceive is the biggest obstacle?
Absolutely. So yeah, early on, what was the biggest obstacle? I think just getting to grips with everything. What was amazing about, and this is one of the key things that sparked me into action with Geyser, was listening to Jack Dorsey. He said something about basically with Bitcoin, you don't need to ask for permission to build a company, and I was like, oh, that's true. That's pretty basic, but it's very true. If we wanted to do the same thing of building a crowdfunding platform on fiat rails, it will probably take years. It will probably cost us tens of thousands of dollars. It probably wouldn't even happen.
Lawyers ruin everything, eh?
The lawyers, but then you have these people called business strategy, global business financial strategy.
Some fiat
something
bullshit.
Something like that, yeah. And again, thousands of dollars to decide which countries you want to operate with. And then you have to open banking partnership with particular banks that are open in all these different areas, and you'd be spending insane amount of money, right? It ends up being a charity. Like, there's no way that is a viable business. That's why it only makes sense to set up a fundraising platform that only works, with Stripe or with PayPal, because you have one partner, but it only works in 30 freaking countries. So with Bitcoin, that difficulty was taken right off, and it really urges so much entrepreneurship. Again, with two guys, we spent a couple thousand dollars to push a prototype out to see if it would be interesting to people, and it turned out to be interesting enough to keep pursuing it. So that's just the level. I mean, that's really, it's only going to get better. Like, I'm so bullish on the future because of how technology is incredibly increasingly democratizes entrepreneurship so that anyone can build anything super cheaply, right? It's so bullish on the future. And so for it was pretty smooth. The hardest part was managing that and my job and job back then, and you know, learning the bringing a team together flowed quite easily. Now the challenge is building the team and finding the right people that get it, that want to stay, that work super hard and are that are invested in the idea and the project. But I mean, so far we've been really quite lucky, but that is definitely one of the biggest challenges I hadn't expected early on, as in at this point, but is really, really important.
Well, we really appreciate, you know, what you're doing at Geyser Fund. And I think, you know what, the sky's the limit, right? So I think it's fantastic that you're out there, that you're doing this, and that, you know, you made this process very user-friendly. So for people who want to, you know, possibly get to know more information, how could they reach you? How could they find Geyser Fund?
Yeah, absolutely. Find us at geyser.fund. We're on Twitter at geyserfund. I'm metamake14. Feel free to reach out. We also have a Discord, a Telegram. We also have open source contributor kind of spaces in our Discord where we welcome any developers, designers to pitch in, support what we're building, what we're designing. And this is really, I think, you know, if you think about crowdfunding from a different way, for fundraising is really this donation-based funding is a very, very simple financial primitive. It's really just people saying, I want to give money towards this. And it's been done for tens of thousands of years, right? People saying, okay, let's build this church. Okay, let's just pitch in some money and build this thing, right? And this is just a very primitive, very simple, but incredibly powerful. But this is really just the beginning, right? There's more financial layers.
Yeah, one day everyone's roads are going to be built using Geyser Fund, right? It's like, hey, I need more roads. Yeah, just go to Geyser.
Let's do it. Hopefully we make it so easy that becomes a viable alternative rather than paying tax dollars for the roads.
Exactly.
I thought only the government built roads.
How else? How else do they get built? There were no roads before governments. But right. But look, we're going to put all of those links are going to be in the show notes. And guys, that wraps up the Fireside Chat. And we're going to move it on over to Wrecked. Wrecked is brought to you by BTC Pins. Check him out at btcpins.com. Everybody knows the BTC Pins account. He makes absolutely awesome pins, stickers, and Bitcoin accessories. I always like to show off my collection, and we've got the Bitcoin Pleb Underground pin. Check it out at btcpins.com. Use the code PlebUnderground for 5% off all the goodies at btcpins.com. All right, guys, welcome back to Wrecked. Let's dive into it. Okay, we are definitely in the thick of the then they fight you stage. But what's hilarious, what I think is actually comical are the clowns, right? It's the clowns that are making me laugh. And who are the clowns? I'm talking about people like Jamie Dimon. I'm talking about people like Senator Elizabeth Warren. And let's just watch these videos, okay? I've got a couple of videos to put on, and I just in the back of our heads, right? We got to remember who really owns the rails to the big money, right? Because of course Bitcoin is demonized, and quote unquote crypto is demonized, right? As being the rails that funds all of this illicit, horrible activity and just terrible things. But the reality is that who is it that really has access to the rails, the institutions, and the capital to, you know, help move the money around that shouldn't move around? That's right. It's the bankers. So I think we're looking at a whole lot of projection. And yeah, let's take a look at these two choice clips. Here's an old one from 2017. Okay, and it's a tweet from Bitstein, Jamie Dimon, on October 17th. When I made that stupid statement called Bitcoin a fraud, my daughter sent me an email saying, Dad, I own two Bitcoins. Jamie wants to implicate his own daughter as a criminal because he's embarrassed she's outperformed by nearly 900%. But yeah, let's take a listen to this.
I also pointed out...
Fair enough.
When I made that stupid statement, which got all the thing, I called it fraud. My daughter sent me an email saying, Dad, I own two Bitcoins.
They have no shame. Okay, so look, there you go. That was 2017. Now, here we go. We're going to fast forward. Here is a tweet from Bitcoin Magazine. Okay?
Just before that, Phil, anyone that says Bitcoins, I reckon, has a lot more than two. Like, you hear OGs using the word Bitcoins rather than Bitcoin because they've got fat stacks, and it wouldn't be surprised if the Diamond family is another one of those.
Yeah, I totally think. Yeah, exactly. But here, let's take a look at this. This was obviously much more recent. I think this happened this week, and... Okay, let's take a listen.
Always been deeply opposed to crypto, Bitcoin, et cetera. You pointed out the only true use case for it is criminals, drug traffickers, anti-money laundering, tax avoidance, and that is a use case because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously, and because it doesn't go through, as you mentioned, all these systems have built up over many years, know your customer, sanctions, OFAC, they can get bypass all of that. If I was the government, I'd close it down.
Okay. That's right. If he was the government, funny. He'd close it down. But yet, also, right, let's go back to September 26th, 2023, not too long ago, right? It is projection. Don't look at what they say. Watch what they do. And what did they do? JP Morgan pays $75 million to settle a lawsuit over the Jeffrey Epstein ties. That's creepy. Right? They agreed to pay $75 million to settle claims by the U.S. Virgin Islands that the bank aided in the disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking. No way. No way. Companies that have the rails to that kind of money and can hide that kind of... What? No, we don't believe that. You could trust the banks. The largest U.S. bank also reached a confidential settlement with Jess Staley, a former private banking chief who was close to Epstein and who JP Morgan blamed for keeping him as a client. That's right. It was somebody's fault, right? It wasn't them as an institution. It's an individual's fault. Both settlements were reached 4 weeks, and this is the key, before a scheduled trial, largely resolving a scandal that has weighed on JP Morgan all year. You better believe that they do not want to go to trial over this. Because what happens in a trial, there's a whole lot of exposing that goes on. And then the information gets a whole lot worse. So I think that, I think we're definitely in the thick of the then they fight you stage. And this particular rhetoric, I think is comical because they're going back to old debunked narratives. And for the people who don't know what I'm referring to, you may want to check out the Twitter account, Ron Paul. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm not talking about the politician. He is an AML KYC expert, and he has thoroughly debunked the usefulness of KYC and AML for effectively stopping money laundering and, quote unquote, the movement of illicit funds. Look, the banks, they can't handle competition, okay? They've thrived and grown in a rigged system. You cannot have competition. So what needs to happen is that Bitcoin needs to be discredited to the point where they can control it and then they can spin a narrative. But you see, this is the problem. It's the problem. They can do that with all of crypto. They can't do it with Bitcoin as much as they want. So the only thing they have left is to scream and shout over and over again. Just keep saying the same thing. And hopefully, all of us peons will eventually believe it. Anyways, before we move on to the next part of Wrecked, I want to get some comments here. Mick, before we go to Walton, what are your thoughts on this story? Am I just...
I think Yeah. I think Jamie Dimon's still pissed that he didn't get like a big enough cut of the cartel's money, because I think HSBC was doing all of it and no one went to jail from HSBC. Like, not a single person. They got found to be, what is laundering anyway? But they got found to be laundering, you know, billions of cartel drug money, and no one went to jail. You know, a couple people got fines, and that's just what was found, right? The legacy banking system, unlike Bitcoin, has no independent ledger, right? The legacy banking system is designed for obfuscation, designed for you know, one rule for the elites and different rules for everyone else. We still haven't heard any names from that Epstein black book either. But Jamie Dimon's clearly paying someone to not open that book.
They just paid $75 million to help keep that book shut. You know, what are your thoughts on this, Mick? Are we just tinfoil hatting this?
No, not at all, guys. I mean, totally aligned with you guys,
we're all tinfoil hatting.
Well, like you said, Phil, I don't know, man. I think it's pretty, basically, 20% of Americans own some type of crypto, right? So did Senator Warren just say 20% of Americans are money launderers, you know, terrorists, and who knows what else, like criminals? Because I mean, that's how I don't think that makes any sense either, right? Like, I think like you said, Phil, she's using a very old and debunked narrative that people just don't buy. It's just making a lot more obvious and transparent the complete inequality between I think maybe young people that are completely financially marginalized, can't buy a house, can't buy shit, you know, have shitty jobs, inflation is hitting hard, that actually are potentially see the safe haven in hopefully Bitcoin and not crypto. But and then on the other hand, this class of old people that have financial interests that the financial system is serving, that is instead kind of keeping that exit out of place. So yeah, I think it's sad to see that. It's sad to see that, but I think it's becoming more obvious that there's this massive tension that exists in the world, is this polarization of opinions, and Bitcoin is at the heart of that. And that's why we need to keep on pushing Bitcoin, because, you know, for example, I'm just reminded of Coinbase's awesome advertisement, which is great, and then ends with Coinbase and not Bitcoin, right? But I think that's really an interesting read of it, is like that, like, these are what the politicians are saying, but, you know, Bitcoin is here to be that solution to that true use case, which is inflation resistance, freedom, you know, wealth for everyone, and good stuff, you know, like 5%, was it more 5 to 10% of all financial transaction happening using fiat rails is considered has some sort of illicit activity. With Bitcoin, it's less than 1%. It's like Bitcoin is just proven over and over and over again that it's not the place where you want to transact illegal activity. It's fucking transparent. So just it makes no sense. And it's sad to see. But honestly, I think they're running out of ammo. That's what it tells me.
They're
running out of ammo.
It's almost as if the incentives for politicians are to create divisive psyops that make the population fight each other and not pay enough attention to how much money they're printing, how much they're spending on wars, how much money the Pentagon can't keep track of, right? The Pentagon, I think, they spent like a couple hundred million on an audit, and there were, I don't know, was it like billions and billions of money that was just missing, right? The politicians want to divide the populace as a distraction from bigger things that are happening.
Very well said. Okay, we're gonna move on
terrorism always works really well as a great psyop, you know, narrative, very, very successful in many cases. But in this case, I'm sorry, but it really doesn't work.
Yeah, the government really has a monopoly on violence, on terrorism. I mean, yeah, right. It's not terrorism when they do it, right? Yeah.
Right.
Of course not. What are you talking about? That's how you brainwash people, right? It's the other people that are terrorists. Technically, the people that founded America were terrorists back in the day, right? Yeah. It's so brutal. It's so brutal and ugly, and there is just so many different angles to it. But I do agree with you, Walton, about the PSYOP. And moving on, we're going to take a look at, I feel like Ledger, man. Ledger hardware wallet just can't catch a break. That's right, guys. Okay, so here we got a retweet from Seed Signer. Very cool do-it-yourself product. Check it out. They help you stay sovereign. Check them out, Seed Signer. Anyways, not an ad for Seed Signer, but it's just funny that they retweeted this. So here we go. There's endless tracking code in the core of the system. And this is a tweet from Wrecked Builder. Okay. And here we go. This is what he had to say. Past few hours, I've been working on a clean version of Ledger Live. Okay. The amount of user tracking code in it is overwhelming. They track everything. There's tracking even when you look at parts of the screen. I want a Ledger Live that'll simply install and uninstall apps. No wallet, no ads, no user tracking, no account, no login. So look, we never recommend, like, we really don't recommend specific hardware wallets or anything like that on this show, but we do tell people, hey,
signing devices.
Sorry, Walton, signing devices.
Especially for Seed Signer, because they do not store the seed on there, right?
No, they don't. Exactly. The second that thing powers down, it loses. It has no memory. There's nothing stored on that thing. But anyways, look, Ledger, from at least as far back as I can remember, just has one bad thing after another. They've got the email list leaked. They've got that weird that happened twice.
And okay. The hat recently that you keep the Ledger hat. In the side.
How could I forget the hat? We even put that on an episode. The ridiculous
a chain
hat.
So you can wear it on your neck or something. Although Adam Back does that with his jade, right? Anyway.
Yeah, it's like, why would I want it? Why would I want to encourage somebody to punch my chest in, right? Or stuff, you know, or shoot me? Like, it's just it's ridiculous. But then also at the same time, right? They've got this backup service, right? This Ledger Live thing, which number one has all kinds of tracking, and number two stores data that you don't want stored on the internet. So I forget. I don't think it's your seed, but I know that there is some information that is tied to you that is stored in their backup automatically. So, and I don't know exactly what that info is, but still. All of that is crap. I don't know who is working at Ledger Live that doesn't seem to understand the point of Bitcoin. But if you ask me, they've clearly decided to just cater to shitcoiners and LARPs. That to me is the, you know, I mean, I don't mean to dump on them like that, but that to me is what they're doing. They're just catering to shitcoiners
and LARPs. Hey, French people, stick to making food. You do a way better job of that.
Terrible. Anyways, Mick, what are your thoughts before we move on to the last piece of Wrecked?
Yeah, not much. I think you said it all pretty well. I mean, they keep on giving. I mean, they keep on giving us really good stories. So yeah. Let's see what they come up with next.
Terrible stories. And speaking,
to be fair, it's good for education, right? Like if there was no Ledger, it's hard to kind of explain how not to do Bitcoin security, and you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a very good point, right? We are learning what not to be done. And speaking of which, it's not Wrecked yet, but you guys are going to have to be the judge of that. And I think only time will tell. Unfortunately, we have companies like BlockFi and Celsius. And of course, you know, the FTX blow up, and we could talk about Three Arrows Cap and all this stuff. So look, this was an article, actually, shout out to Copernicusson, right, for tagging me in this in one of our groups, just to see if this was a legit story. And indeed, it was dropped on Yahoo Finance. It was dropped on Fortune, and it appears that it is a legitimate story. So Swan deployed more than $200 million in 2023, building out institutional offerings such as Bitcoin-backed lending. And obviously the link to this is going to be in the show notes so people can check it out. But look, and again, you know, we've seen there's very few players in the space who have managed to do Bitcoin-backed lending successfully. I do hope that Swan has looked at those models and has decided to replicate those models, because we do know which models don't work. So putting it in wrecked, but they're not wrecked yet.
The article was by a guy called Schwartz, which I believe is German for a black. And so we've got another Black Swan event here. Swan.
It also means Shoemaker.
Apparently, yeah, right. Swan are actually just been approved to just do another wrapped service. They're actually just selling BitGo's institutional products, but of course marketing it as their own, just like they do with, you know, using Prime Trust or Fortress Trust as, you know, their broker and custodian. It's all, they really are one of the worst Bitcoin only companies in terms of they say one thing and they're doing another. It's kind of slimy.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I do want to point out, though, that in the article, that none of that stuff is glossed over. It is totally explained, right? The rocky relationship with Prime Trust and the immediate pivot to Fortress, and then the falling through of the Ripple deal. I can't believe I'm saying that. The Ripple deal.
I forgot about the Ripple thing for a minute.
What was the Ripple deal? I might have missed that. Oh, God.
They got bailed out by Ripple.
So Ripple was going to to purchase Fortress. Okay, so this is after, after the Prime Trust debacle. So they were going to purchase Fortress, but then at the last minute they backed out of purchasing Fortress and simply just gave them a loan to keep them afloat. So that to me, I don't know. I don't think that's we appreciate you, like we'll keep you alive, but like we don't have much hope.
So that's kind of the same thing as isn't that what FTX did with BlockFi or something like that? I feel like that these things happen, right? They go, or CZ did it with someone else. They lend them some money and they go, oh yeah, well maybe we'll buy you, and then they look through the books and they go, well, we're not buying you, but you can have that loan.
Yeah, exactly. We can write that off when you disappear, you know. But anyways, I just hope that they do it right. That's all I got to say, right? If we're being objective, right, it's just to say, hey, hopefully you guys are going to follow the model that does not wrecked holders and that does not wrecked users. Anyways, guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. That wraps up the wrecked segment. And we are going to move it on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium. Up next, we have Hopium, sponsored by Represent. Represent are a Bitcoin-owned clothing brand based in the United States of America. If you head over to representltd.com, you can see their wide range of apparel and accessories, quality made with some very funky designs. Here you see a limited edition shirt that you can't buy, but you can buy many cool things. Almost as cool things over at Represent. Once again, that's representltd.com. And if you use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND, you will get a discount on all of the goodies. Welcome back to Hopium. Of course, the price has been pumping this week. The fiat exchange rate, right? We call it. And so I want to share a couple of tweets with you. The first one by... I don't know what he calls himself these days. Something like the Pope of Bitcoin, right? One of the best affinity scammers in the Bitcoin space. Now Duke of El Salvador, the Kaiser. He says, BTC price was lagging behind the rise in hash rate while competitor CZ and Binance was being targeted. And then taken down at the behest of large Wall Street players. The price rise is now catching up to the implied hash-adjusted price of $375,000. Max, for the last couple of years, has been saying 220K by conference day. I believe, you know, we're still to hit 220K, and we're, you know, few few years after those predictions. What's to be noted here is he doesn't give a date, right, for this price prediction. At least he can't get called out that it hasn't happened by a certain time.
What a good salesman.
People are feeling bullish, right? And I'm just going to share another tweet, because it's not just Bitcoin hopium dealers. It's also one of the kind of biggest TradFi players in the Bitcoin space, Fidelity. Have a model here, and they this is a tweet from Bitcoin Mindset. He's saying 500k plus by 2025. What they've done here is they've just put the different cycle patterns from where we are now, the black line showing the BTC price at the moment. That was the 2017 analog, the 2011 one, and the 2013, and they all seem to, if it follows any of these patterns, we should be at apparently about 500k in the next year or two. Gents, the price is pumping. Where's it gonna go? What do you think?
That was some good that was some good hopium, that second chart. Yeah, Max, that has nothing to do with him personally. It just has to do with that type of cheerleader. I know that some people think that this is really good, and I get it, right? Like, somebody, you know, you may have not done enough research, or you just don't have enough self-confidence or conviction. And so you need to hear the wonderful, fluffy, feel-good things from these cheerleaders, but they're not doing you any service, right? Like, they're not doing anyone any service by giving these, like, lofty expectations of just, it's like regurgitated, it's just like regurgitated nonsense. You know, like, we heard a whole bunch of people talking about $500,000 last cycle. You know, again, without naming names, there were people that, you know, some Twitter influencers, right?
Odell said a million.
Not just Odell, but some other Twitter influencers, right? That were sitting there telling you to freaking mortgage your house at the top, right? Like,
or sell your car, and then they go, yes, and buy a Mercedes S-Class a couple, yeah, months later, right?
Yeah, exactly. So just this absolute ridiculous garbage, okay? Like, that really doesn't do anything for anyone. And to me, it's unfortunate, because it's just a lot of the people with the least amount of conviction that are that hoist these people up on their shoulders, you know. So it's, I don't think they're doing anyone a service, but I do appreciate the hopium chart, the second one there. That looks pretty cool. And again, I don't think those charts either do people any service, at least the part that hasn't come true yet. I do think that seeing the historical price action gives people a frame of reference, and I think that can be helpful. But again, we shouldn't be placing all of our eggs in that basket. What are your thoughts, Mick?
I agree, man. I mean, well, it's a lot to unpack. I think once you're in Bitcoin for at least a cycle, you need to learn to stay humble, right? That we don't fucking know, right? Anyone who gives a number, just like, really, again, still, really? Like, it's only gonna hurt people in some way, right? If you give a number and it's too low, then people are gonna cuss you because it's too low. If it's too high, they're gonna cuss at you because it's too high. Just don't do it. And then if you do that, I remember it happened to me in the last cycle. I think I was listening to Peter McCormack, who had Willie Woo on, right? I don't know why I was listening to that, but, you know, giving insane prediction of 300k, 400k easy, oh, definitely, for sure, you know, 100%. It's like, easy. And just like, and look, by the time we were all so bullish, and, you know, and maybe it would have happened if all the money didn't go into crypto, but,
or if anyway, FTX didn't, you know, fuck around so much.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like just learning the lesson, you know, and passing them on to your friends, your family, to people that were listening to these idiots. Yeah, keep those around you, like, safe, and not, and just acknowledging that we don't fucking know. because it will rip our faces off for sure. It'll fuck up all our models. That's why we have to just, I think this is where Bitcoin is so great at teaching us lessons. It's a bit like a mirror, and it's just accept our humanity, accept our complete ignorance on what's going to happen. Just take it day by day, enjoy the moment, and we'll be fine.
Very once awesome. Again, I'm going to remind everyone that when it comes to hopium, yes, these kind of hopium stories make you feel good. That's the point of it. But if you look at incentives, most people who are claiming there's going to be extreme price action, it's because of their incentives. Now, traders do it because sometimes they're betting the other way, or they're making some bet, right, and telling people to go long, they've got a leverage long, whatever it is. There's some position that they're making, and if they get enough people in, then it causes that to happen. When it comes to people like Max, I think he probably has some equity in the Bitfinex organization. I think if you actually look, a lot of these kind of quote unquote thought leaders, even in the Bitcoin or more the Bitcoin only space, most of them either own an exchange or have some sort of referral program or something like this, such that they get a cut of trading fees. Mm-hmm. And if they're pushing for, the price is going to do this, maybe you get a bunch of people then buying Bitcoin and they get a cut. And it doesn't actually matter what the price does after that. And so, yeah, please, when people are selling you something, look at the incentives behind why they're selling you that. Maybe you'll find that their incentives don't align with yours. Gents, I have two more stories for Hopium. The first comes back to something we talked about earlier. In this high fee environment in the mempool, with it costing more and more for to make on-chain transactions, developers are trying to build tools for scaling, right? Alex Bosworth, who works for Lightning Labs, says, with high chain fees, we're working on a new form of lightning loop where you can submerge a submarine swap at low chain fee times, keep it cold, and then instantly execute off-chain side of the swap when the chain fees go high. Thanks to pay to Taproot, it would cost nothing to add to UTXOs. I personally don't understand enough of that in just from that one tweet to really know if that's going to be something that's going to happen anytime soon. But as we said before, the pain drives technological innovation. And just, I'm going to share this last story before I get your comments, gents. This I really liked. This is a development in the fake Toshi trial, right? Craig Wright has been running around the world suing Bitcoin developers and other Bitcoiners. I think BSV is, you know, one of the biggest attacks on Bitcoin. It's funded by, you know, this billionaire pedophile Calvin Ayer. And apparently now they're even like marketing BSV to children. Well, BSV was always about marketing to children, wasn't it? I'm on a tangent here, but an English court has ordered Tulip Trading, which is Craig's company, to prove that it owns the $4 billion of Bitcoin. So in order to... let me just jump down here. Before the trial on whether Bitcoin devs owe anything to him, he has to actually prove that he owns the Bitcoin in question. So the courts have seemingly finally caught up a little bit to some of the nuance of how Bitcoin works and are actually going to ask him to prove that he owns this in the only way that he can, right, by showing the keys in order to then claim that he's owed something. I think a very, very good development, gentlemen.
He's not gonna make it. Mick, go ahead.
No, man, I'm just so glad that the legal system can be relied on for these types of things. At some points, I thought we couldn't, but at least it maintained its authority in this case, which is good to see.
I gotta say, it just doesn't. It certainly seems to be raining shit on Craig Wright. Like he just this like why even what is the benefit at this point of cosplaying besides the fact that I think he's managed to milk a whole bunch. I guess that must have been it, right? He's created a whole bunch of income for himself from fleecing noobs on not real Bitcoin, and that to me, like that's all there is to it. You know, like that's really all he has, because otherwise this has just been an embarrassing shit show of a guy wasting everyone's time, just wasting everybody's time with this complete nonsense charade. And to your points, both of your points, I think it's fantastic that the courts are waking up to the fact that, hey, you know, like this guy has to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that he owned all of that corn. And I mean, I'm just going to say it right now. He didn't own any of that shit. Okay? Didn't own any of that. And he is screwed. And what is sad, I know that we're not supposed to, I know that we're not supposed to be nice to the BSVers, but what really is sad is these bag holders. Because I know, and I feel bad, because I was a shitcoiner once upon a time, and I let myself get grifted by stupid narratives that didn't make sense. So there are some real human beings that read this stuff, did not understand it, and actually think that BSV is legit. And they actually think that CSW really is Satoshi, and that all of this is just one giant conspiracy of the system against my shitcoin. Like, it's really not. Like, and it's too bad, because these people are going to just, I think that these people are the ones that are really going to get hurt by this in the end. You
Well,
know?
BSV, the BSV camp very much believe that the legal system is actually part of how you determine who owns things. And they've tried to use the legal system against many innocent parties. And it's beautifully ironic now that the legal system is actually gonna, you know, kick them in the nuts. You know,
Yeah.
seems somewhat poetic.
BSV
Anyway.
down forever. Yeah,
Yeah.
BSV down forever.
Yeah, luckily enough, I don't know any BSVers, but I'm sure there's many out there that probably need to learn an important lesson. Yeah.
I'll before we wrap up, I just want to say this quickly. Once upon a time, like let's say 3, 4 years ago, there was a really, really like well-known Bitcoiner that used to troll the shitcoiners all the time. And at one point, I think it was like PJ Miller or something like that. Anyways, and he claimed that he was infiltrating BSV and trying to like learn more about it. And then all of a sudden, like he was just a BSV. Like that was it. He was just gone. So like,
He was gone.
bought off, bought off.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I honestly think so, but it's just so strange, right? Like that account like totally disappeared. And then there's the case of guys that became BSVers like Daniel Krawitz, right, from long ago. Like he started he did the Nakamoto Institute with Bitstein and Pierre. Like, how the hell did you be how did you fall so far away having those two guys talk to you? Anyways, guys, this is gonna wrap up this episode of Pleb Underground. But before we go, Metamic, let the viewers and listeners know where they can find you and Geyser Fund again.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're a creator, if you want to launch your project, if you want to have an idea and you just want to make it happen with your community, definitely go check out geyser.fund. We help make your idea happen much more quickly, much more seamlessly, thanks to your community and the platform we offer. So yeah, go check out geyser.fund. You can find us on Twitter, on Telegram, on Discord, and we'll be there to help.
That is
Or you can find me
absolutely.
on MetaMic14 on Twitter.
That is awesome. We are going to put that in the show notes for you guys. That wraps up the episode. Don't forget, like and subscribe. Help us grow. Don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream a sats, check us out on Fountain.fm. You could stream us sats through Breeze. Walton, how do we wrap this one up?
Fuckshitcoins.com. Please like and subscribe. We will see you next week.
Peace. More toxic than the most toxic Bitcoin match.